welcome back to another episode of the Amber May Show. So glad you are joining me today, friends, because I brought back Scott Shara. You might remember him. He shared about the death of his daughter, Grace. There was a documentary that we aired on. Well, we didn't air that documentary, but we talked to the director and the filmmaker of the documentary, Breaking the Oath. And so I had Scott come back because he wanted to share solutions to how do we fight against medical kidnapping. And so today we're going to talk about the solutions that he has come up with, and I think they're very well done. So please like, share, and subscribe. Please like, share, and subscribe. If you believe in what I'm doing, consider becoming an angel investor. And the easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com, click the donate button, and donate whatever you feel like you could donate. You can also go to the merch site on the website and purchase something on the website, and that just helps. I'm not making a lot of money on it, just a couple bucks, and that just helps the show out there. Or you can be a $5 monthly subscriber for one cup of coffee a month. You can help support The Amber May Show by going to theambermayshow.locals.com. I always add more info, so join me on Telegram at The Amber May Show. I'm on True Social, Amber May, Frank Social, Amber May, and Clout Hub. So join me on those platforms over there as well. But I also wanted to let you know Patriot Mobile is the only Christian conservative mobile cell phone carrier out there. So I would say make the switch today and drop the woke companies and use Patriot Mobile. I made the switch. It was very easy. I have great cell phone signal. I use the Verizon towers. And if you go to patriotmobile.com/Amber or use promo code Amber at patriotmobile.com, you'll get free activation. So check that out as well. Well, coming up right now is Scott Shara.
Frozen again. Shoot.
Go for it.
There we go. I don't know. You're frozen again. This is strange. I think I'm going to go out and come back in.
Okay.
Although maybe it's going to be good now. Now you look good. All right. So you added out this stuff or what? Do you just let her rip?
Yeah, I added.
Okay. So, you know, your 10-year-old forgets lunch, forgets her water. All right. So I'm older than you. I don't know if you noticed that, but if you didn't, it's pretty obvious. So unless you've done some type of surgery and dye your hair a lot, I mean, you're about half my age. So assuming you grew up in a different generation, in my generation, responsibility came before freedom. In this generation, freedom comes before responsibility. So I got criticized for this example. So my daughter, Jessica, at the time was 10, same as your daughter, and she lost her retainer.
Mm.
She had the braces, then lost her retainer. So she comes, Dad, I lost my retainer. Okay, well, so then I said to her, how did that become my problem? And she said, well, I don't know what to do. I said, well, you're going to have to look up so this is back when there were still phone books. I said, you're going to have to look up the phone number for the dentist and make the phone call and then get an appointment. And then, you know, you're going to have to come up with the money to pay the dentist to make a replacement retainer. And so she did all that. And so when I used to tell that story, you know, people say, oh my gosh, that's insane. That's insane. Well, guess what? My daughter, Jessica, is the most responsible 33-year-old, I think she's 33 now, is that right? Yeah, 33-year-old that I know. And people who are 33 are completely irresponsible. Mm-hmm. I have a few of them working for me and they completely do not know how to think.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you stop it permanently. And you build an adult that becomes somebody who their handshake is their bond.
No, that's a great way. That's a great way to do it. So perhaps she needs to make her lunch next time. That's a great, great tool. I think that's a great idea. You know,
I knew you would buy into it. Of course, you're going to get all kinds of thumbs down when people review this, but I don't care. I'm not going for likes or dislikes.
Yeah, I think making them responsible is very important. Like, my daughter was complaining about her last school teacher sometimes, that she was too hard on them. And I said to her, you know what? She's trying to teach you responsibility, because someday in life, you're not going to have a mom and a dad to say, did you do this? Did you do that? You need to be responsible. So if you forget your homework, you're not supposed to call me and have me bring it down there. Your teacher wants you to take responsibility. You forgot your homework, not mom forgot your homework. And so if you got a bad grade, then that's the consequence of forgetting your homework. So I'm okay with your teacher doing that, because she's trying to teach you responsibility. And so I'd show different aspects when her teacher was really difficult, how her teacher was doing it for her best interest, to show her, well, these are consequences. All of our decisions have consequences, and you have to be responsible for the decisions you make.
That is exceedingly rare. Mm-hmm. So back again, when I was in school, that was the norm, right? The teacher wrote on the chalkboard the assignment one time. You were responsible for writing the assignment in your notebook with the deadline. Mm-hmm. If you didn't do that, it's over, right? Mm-hmm. You got a consequence for the choice. Yeah, now, I mean, I remember seeing this. I'll just share another story. I had a young man, Nick, one of my favorite summer employees. And, you know, he was working with me on a job site one day, and he asked, can I leave early today? I said, well, what's the reason you want to leave early? He said, well, my sister is graduating from kindergarten. So they had a graduation from kindergarten to get a freaking trophy. You know, that's insanity. So that's where we're at, you know, and it's of course worse now, because, you know, they're teaching kids all kinds of shenanigans that they mm-hmm. shouldn't. So if you honestly have a teacher who's teaching responsibility, you know, that's a blessing, because, mm-hmm. you know, to have reminders for assignments, to have retakes, do-overs, you know, that's not real life. So mm-hmm. these people become employees. Then, you know, even worse if they go to college, because now they go to college and the professor tells them you should start at $75,000 a year.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the way it should start is, so, you know, when I used to do the interviews for our company, I would ask them, how much do you think you should get paid? Because I wanted to get their perspective. So, you know, these young guys that think they should make $50,000 or $75,000 day one, said, so think through what, so the first day, how much do you know? Well, nothing. Okay. Well then what happens then that first day? So mm-hmm. in order for you to do anything, you've got to steal time mm-hmm. from somebody else. So you've got to take from somebody who's worth it. So now they can't do their job. Mm-hmm. to get you to do your job. So at the end of the first day, you probably owe us $200 to $300.
Yes.
Then the end of the second day. So now what happens is, if you start at $30,000 a year, you know, by the end of the first year, we may have broken even on you. But the goal of an employer is to make a profit on the
employee. That's right.
It is not to pay the employee. So now by the end of the second year, this is all employers will tell you this. The goal mm-hmm. is to make a profit. So you finally have a profitable employee after 2 years. And then what does the employee do?
Quit.
Oh my gosh, I finally know something. Here's my 2 weeks notice. What yep. are you talking about? 2 weeks notice? That's insanity. But that's how they're programmed to believe. Well, if I just give my notice, I did. No, that's not being responsible. I'll tell you what responsibility looks like. You find and train your replacement. That's what responsibility looks like. The employer has, you know, the employer should not be taking the risk here. That is not how it's supposed to work. You know, it was only 150 years ago that it was done just like this. There was apprenticeships mm-hmm. and that was the deal. I mean, you had to become essentially you had a contract essentially yes. with the employer, because yep. that was understood by both parties. The employer is going to go all in on you, and you're going to go all in on the employer. So we have a relationship that's going to last an extended period of time, because that's what it has to be.
I don't think, Scott, that most people know how much it costs the employers to train people, to hire people, to employ people, and then just to let them quit or just have people quit. It's really hard for the employer, because you're right. Every employer that has put time and money and effort into someone and then they just quit ends up being a loss to the employer. And if you reverse roles and say you're the employer, would you want an employee to keep costing you money all the time? No. I think back when they used to have pensions, it was so great because it kept people in one spot. If they were going to have a retirement, they couldn't just quit because then a retirement would go away. I think the 401k was a detriment to business owners because it didn't tie anybody to that business like a pension did. I hope we'll see a comeback on pensions, because I think pensions was a great idea. Now, I know it's more expensive than a 401k. I'm in that kind of line of work, but I think that's when we saw a fundamental shift in employee versus employers and constantly leaving. I'm just like, I know people, and I'm just like, how come you never can stick with a job more than a couple of years? Why are you always quitting? Why are you always transferring? That's terrible.
And they don't think anything of it. And I don't think pensions are the answer, because that's an outside fix. I mean, I get it. I get what you're saying. But inside, people have to understand God's principles, you know, responsibility, commitment, accountability, looking out for the other person. So I'll give you another mm-hmm. story. And then this is really kind of a good segue to what we want to talk about today, which is hospital rescues. But I'm going to give you another story. Yeah, and so so this is another hiring story or employment story. So you have an opening at your company, mm-hmm. and you have two men you've hired for this opening. And so, by the way, I mean, I'm just going to be blunt here. We only hire men. So I don't blame you. It isn't because of the drama, that it's because of the fact that this work is hard. I own a pond management company. And so, you know, the idea of equal pay for equal work, of course, everybody would agree with that. But you mm-hmm. can't have, there would never be a lady who could do the equal work in this environment. It isn't going to happen. You mm-hmm. know, so it just.
That's going to be a very unpopular thing to say, but I'm with you on that. You know what? I have not had a good experience working with females. I loved it when I worked at the radio station and it was all men. There was no drama. None of us, there was no fighting. We did our work. We completed it. And that was it. I've dealt in situations where women were just so cruel to me in the workplace. I worked as a dialysis tech in college because it was perfect for my school schedule. And they would hide my stethoscope. They'd try to get into my locker. It was a horrible situation for me. I mean, every day I went into work, it was a battle. And I didn't even do anything to these women. But just because I was young, no kids, freshly married, had a house, like that was enough to piss him off. Like, it's not my fault that I made good choices. And maybe you think you didn't make good choice. Maybe, like, whatever their case was against me, it was awful, awful, awful. I worked in a retail furniture before that. And the manager was a 40-year-old woman. I was in my 20s at the time. And she was horrible to me and trying to get me fired. And I was the one who worked there longer than her. And I should have been promoted to manager. I was the assistant manager, but I guess the business owner thought I was too young to be 20 and be a manager, but she was trying to fire me every way she can. And eventually it worked. Eventually it worked. She lied enough and said enough lies that the owner finally let me go. And I'm just like, that's terrible. I did none of these things that this lady accused me of. So I don't enjoy working with women, to be honest with you. I've not had good experiences with women.
Well, I mean, that was really a great 1-2 punch with what. So I want to share this example, and this really is for any employee listening. This is not for owners. I mean, owners will get this, but employees really need to hear this, because this is what employers are looking for. So now, you have an opening. So I have an opening for one person. I've got two people. I've interviewed their a 10. You know, every category, they are tied. It's like, oh my gosh, how do I deal with this now? Who do I pick? Right? Because now they're, you know, they both can, you know, come get there on time. They've got the good work history, personality-wise, just fantastic. So every category that I would interview under, they're principled, you know, they're, it's like, okay, so do I flip a coin? What do I do? So you know, the next morning God gives me a revelation and says, just ask them one question. And so I bring them both back in. And so I said, I'm going to decide based on how you answer this question. And the question is, when can you start? And one of the men says, I can start in 2 weeks. I'll have a meeting with my boss today and I will be here 2 weeks from today. And the other one says, I have no idea. I said, I've got to sit down with my boss and figure out a plan so that he's not left hanging. So which one do you hire? So, you know, that's what we want. We want men who are going to take responsibility and understand what that looks like for everybody. So pretty easy decision at that point.
That's a beautiful story. Now, when we last left you, you were telling us about this lawsuit that was happening in your family and how that was a miracle of God. And you wanted to give us solutions, and I'm guessing it was solutions to medical kidnapping. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I would love to hear your solutions to this problem, because now it's being on the forefront. Child kidnapping has been happening for a long time in the medical field, but for the first time during COVID, adults are being kidnapped medically. If you don't believe me, there's a great documentary on Netflix called Take Care of Maya. There was a nurse, a mother who was a nurse, and her daughter was medically kidnapped in the hospital system. If you go back to my show, you'll hear multiple stories of where kids were medically kidnapped through CPS on my show. So I encourage you to go to the Amber May Show and find me on Rumble, Brady on BitChute, Frank Speech, Podbean. Go look at those shows. And Scott's one of those families. However, his daughter was a legal adult at that time, but there were minors. So I'm just showing you there was, and there's also other adults that were kidnapped during this time, senior adults that were kidnapped. So I have stories after stories to share with you. You could also go to the resource page at theambermayshow.com, click the child trafficking page, and you're going to see medical kidnapping happening there. So I would love to hear what your insights are on this subject.
So I'd look at it a lot broader than these examples. And I want to frame this. This is what I just turned around because I was sketching this out this morning as to what was the old paradigm and what's the new paradigm. So the new paradigm was opened up with COVID. So with COVID, the medical kidnapping was the rule. So we had 1.2 million Americans who were murdered in hospitals with COVID as a diagnosis during the 39-month COVID era. So that became the rule, this medical kidnapping, because they instituted a policy that you could not be with your loved one in a COVID wing. So, you know, Grace's story is one of the very few where a family member was with the person when they died. It's also one of the reasons that we're able to do a lawsuit, because we took notes. We took contemporaneous notes. We transcribed this, so we knew what happened. You know, most people don't know what happened. We knew what happened. So during COVID, it simply exposed this idea of medical kidnapping, and it became the rule. The old way was still medical kidnapping. So I want to change people's paradigm first so that you understand what I'm talking about. Because if you don't change your belief, you will never change your actions. And so my goal with this discussion, when we left last time, you know, we ran out of time. And so, you know, we agreed to come back. And the idea is, okay, what are we even talking about? If you can change your belief after this show, it will save your life. So the belief I'm talking about is the belief that these hospital systems are killing fields. Okay. Not every single one of them, but the majority are. And so I'm going to go through the old way versus the new way, what COVID exposed. So the new way, Center for Medicaid Services institutes hospital protocols, and then they result in death. Okay, so we have, you know, the remdesivir, the ventilators. So remdesivir, 75% kill rate, ventilators, 90% kill rate. So it was a direct payment from Center for Medicaid Services to hospitals to follow protocols that killed people. So that's the new way that got exposed with COVID. So what was the old way? Because the old way has been doing this for decades prior, but we didn't see it. COVID got me to see that the old way was actually causing death too, but they called it hastening death. So it wasn't actual death, it was hastening death. So you died prematurely. So how did they do this? So I'm looking at these notes because I just sketched this out this morning. So we still had Center for Medicaid Services. And after Obamacare, I'm not sure before Obamacare, but Obamacare was passed March 23rd of 2010, CMS became the standard for writing standards of care. So then the standards of care are adopted by the insurance companies, and then the insurance companies set the hospital protocols, and those hospital protocols hasten death. So I'll give you an example. What is the standard of care when somebody gets cancer, bladder cancer, just about every cancer? The standard of care has some version of chemo and radiation. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now CMS sets that standard of care. You come to the doctor. Okay, he diagnosed you with this cancer, standard of care, chemo, radiation. Now the hospital adopts that protocol, or the medical facility adopts that protocol. What happens? You have premature death because chemo, radiation only has a 3% chance of success. Okay, which really is a 0% chance of success, because those people would have lived whether they got anything because they had strong immunity, whatever. But if somebody then says, no, I'm not going to follow this, I'm going to take B17, or I'm going to go to Dr. Brzezinski's clinic, or I'm going to do juicing. There's many, many cures for cancer that are hidden from the public. So the person says, no, I'm not going to do this standard of care you're recommending. Well, guess what? Now they're completely on their own. Their insurance, which that has become a scam. We think we have to have insurance. So my wife mm-hmm. and I have checked out of the, we don't have medical insurance. So we don't have that temptation to ask the question, well, will my insurance pay for it? No, mm-hmm. We don't even have that temptation, which is a piece of the puzzle. So now if you don't have that, so now the person says, no, I'm not going to follow your chemo radiation perspective because I'm awake to cancer treatments. So now they get a cancer treatment, which cures them. They're doing that 100% out of pocket now. And I'll give you an anecdotal story that proves this. I was diagnosed with heart disease 6 years ago. And so then they take me through a battery of tests and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, I decide to start researching. And so I bought a book called Undoctored. It was written by a cardiologist that decided the system is too corrupt. I'm getting out. So he writes this book. And I read it and I find out, oh my gosh, there's follow the money. So he explained like how the American Medical Association will, or the American Heart Association, I'm sorry, will sponsor like Cheerios to say it's a heart healthy food. Well, it's not a heart healthy food. It's not at all. But they are, Cheerios or General Mills is paying the American Heart Association $100 million so that they can put this on the box of Cheerios and sell more Cheerios. Okay, so I thought, oh my gosh, this is pretty bad. So anyway, as I'm researching my own heart disease, the nurse for the doctor pulled me aside and said, she said, Scott, I got to tell you something that you're not going to want to hear. I said, what is it? And she said, the reason we're pushing the statin on you is because we have to. I said, what do you mean you have to? That doesn't make any sense to me. And she said, Our Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rates are based on what percentage of our patient population we get to follow the standards of care. So the standard of care with heart disease is the statin. And if you don't follow the standard of care, our reimbursement rates are going to go down.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you said that. Can I share something with you that will back up what you're saying?
If I say no, are you going to do it anyway?
Yes. Okay. First of all, I wanted to show you about this community schools. This is on AmberMayShow.com's website under the resource tab, because the CDC is involved with that. And so is CMS, just what you talked about. They're controlling the school-based health centers, and they're going to try to really educate your kids or change your kids' mind on wanting to be transgender, and they're going to keep you out of it. But on top of that, if you go to childhood vaccines under the resource tab, do you see the childhood vaccine?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're saying is so true, because incentivizing pediatricians to follow the CDC vaccine schedule, there's an article here you guys need to read, because the kickbacks, the pediatricians get major kickbacks on vaccinating your kids. If they don't get a certain percentage of the kids vaccinated, they lose thousands, if not millions of dollars. So it's backing up what you're saying. And this is with vaccines.
I just put, so this is not in a format yet. I'm going to share screen here. This is not in a format yet because I just worked on it this morning. So this will blow your mind. All right. So I'm going to share screen here. This is really cool when we can do stuff where, I mean, this is totally unscripted, which, you know, it's just, it's the best shows you can have when you can totally, when you do them unscripted. Mm-hmm. All right. So I got to do, I'm doing share screen.
You go to present.
All right. Yeah. I did that already. Entire screen. All right. So this, again, this is not in presentation format because I just worked on it this morning. All right. So I want to scroll down here. So you can see there's, I got it. So I have the website link so people can check this out. There's roughly 71,000 family medicine offices in the United States. Okay. So now if you scroll down, you'll see, so this is from Anthem. You can see what they did. So I just used the 50% vaccinated level. So if they got 50% of their patient population vaccinated, this is the individual doctors, by the way, Amber May, they got a $70 bonus per vaccinated member. And then by December 31st, so that was by September 1st, they got another $175 bonus. So this is the actual schedule Anthem produced. So this is an insurance company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they produce this schedule. So now with you look at my math, that 70,790 family medicine practitioners, the number of patients that they have per office. So you can see all my links, 2,500 means that there's 177 million total patients in the United States that go to a family medicine provider. Okay, so then if they were at the 50% vax level for the first bonus, $70, 50% vax level for the second bonus, $175. So then the total that all the doctors receive throughout the country for promoting the vax, assuming 50%, you know, 70% of the people took at least the first jab, yep, according to the statistics. That's right. So I just used the 50% number. So that means $43 billion was paid out by the insurance companies.
Yeah, the website I showed you showed the blue, I think it was Blue Cross Blue Shield schedule. So if you go to my website, you'll see the Blue Cross for pediatricians. Now, I had no idea the adults doctors were getting this too. I mean, I knew there was the COVID payouts for the shot, but I didn't know that the doctors were getting payouts also for that nistatin, you said.
This is for the jab, but yeah.
No, but yeah. I mean,
that's been going on for decades. That's why, it's like, you can't make this up.
Would you send this to me? Because I would love to put this on my website under the childhood vaccine part, because I'm also including some COVID stuff on there. I would love
it. I sure will. So you can see I've made a footnote at the bottom that excludes the pediatricians, and it excludes somehow the insurance companies got the bonuses, right? Mm-hmm. So the government was paying the insurance companies to be able to pay the doctors, right?
Right.
Right. And then you can see the average per doctor, $612,000 per doctor.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
When I invented MyPillow, my passion was to help each and every one of you. And 20 years later, all of your support is what keeps us going. Because of you, we've been able to create thousands of USA jobs and help millions get the best sleep ever. To thank you, my employees and I are bringing you a limited edition MyPillow. The Giza Elegance MyPillow is made with my patented adjustable fill, the most amazing cotton, and a 2-inch pipe gusset. It has 4 custom loft levels, machine washable and dryable, and you get my 60-day money-back guarantee and 10-year warranty.
Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get your limited edition 20th anniversary MyPillow queen size. Retails for $69.98, now only $19.98. That's right, get a queen size MyPillow for only $19.98.
From all of us here at MyPillow,
thanks America! I'm Clay Clark. I'm a very pale male, and you're listening to the Amber May Show. Hey!
Are you looking for a doctor you can trust? Then look no further than Dr. Meehan, and you can find him at MeehanMD.com. That's M-E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, MD.com for all your health care, supplemental, and telemed needs. And you know what my family did? We shopped at his supplemental store, and we purchased these two items to help support our gut health. These are supporting our gut health because you know what? The gut health is so important. Our immune system is in the gut. Our serotonin's made in the gut. And so the most Americans, if you know, have a leaky gut. So if you're looking to improve your health, whether you're improving your gut health or your immune system, or you just have something that you need to talk to a physician about, go to MeehanMD.com. That's M-E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, MD.com. And while you're there, make sure you use the promo code AMBER so you can save some money. And while you're at the website, make sure you set up your telemed appointment and then check out all his supplements that he offers as well. That's MeehanMD.com. Use promo code AMBER at checkout. You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
For promoting the jab. I mean, this is sick, sick stuff. All right, so I'm going to stop sharing here. All right, so again, we're back to, I'm setting a stage for your listeners because I want them to see, unless your belief changes, you will not prepare. So these things I'm sharing you are to get your belief that, oh my gosh, they're all in on this. Mm-hmm. Okay, they are following standards of care. I thought they're following the Hippocratic Oath. A doctor wrote me after he heard me talking, said, Scott, we have not been following the Hippocratic Oath for decades. Nobody even swears to the Hippocratic Oath anymore. That was part of the programming. We've been programmed to trust the white coat, have their our best interest. They would never do anything to harm me. All lie, lie, lie. And what the truth is, I just showed you the truth. The truth is they are there to implement a population reduction agenda. A lot of them don't know they're being used to implement it. Okay.
Let me give you some that actually.
Say that again.
I want to give you proof of that. I don't want your people on here to say, oh, that's just bogus. On the AmberMayShow.com, under resource, under childhood vaccines, there's a white paper from Henry Kissinger. It's the genocide plan of 1974, where the president adopted his plan to go after fertility of women, reducing the fertility of women. It's in this paper right here from Henry Kissinger, an advisor to the president in 1974. So there is proof of this depopulation agenda. I just wanted to share that.
I bounced off for a minute. So hopefully when you edit, you can, you know, it'll work out. But yes, I mean, this population reduction agenda is real. I mean, at the top, the Satanists, that's what they believe. And so that would be a logical extension of, if a person doesn't believe in God, that God's got this, you know, including the population, the planet resources, God's got it. If you don't believe in God, well, then you would say, well, I've got to manage the planet resources, which are, you know, the climate, the minerals, you know, all the resources of the earth, but mainly the population. That's what's screwing it up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these people at the top believe that's what they've got to do. We're their slaves. Mm-hmm. So then what they're using, I mean, God tells us this, the love of money, not money itself, but the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. So now you have a doctor that's got $612,000 carrot in front of him. Just promote this jab. I mean, the world's going to be a better place with this jab. On top of that, they programmed the doctor for about 50 years that jabs are the solution.
Right? That's exactly right, Scott. I want to make that point very clear because I honestly don't believe most of the doctors think they're doing anything wrong. I think they generally believe that the shots are saving humanity because they've been indoctrinated to believe so. And then if I truly believe I'm helping you, Scott, I'm not going to feel guilty about taking a lot of money. Because I'm generally believing I'm doing this for your best interest.
Yes, I do think the majority fit into that category. Mm-hmm. But once you start seeing facts,
yes,
Now I can't give them a pass anymore. So right. Think about hospital murders, for example. So that's the lane I'm in. I mean, we're crossing over in the jab lane, but I'm doing that because I want people to see this. Correct. Okay, so I'm in the hospital murder lane. So at the beginning, okay, they fooled us. COVID is, you know, this is a panic, right? COVID, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but now once the doctors and nurses start giving remdesivir and ventilator protocols, you know, and then after 3 weeks, every single one of their patients is dead. Okay, it's time to wake up, right? So, you know, now Grace dies almost 2 years into this fake pandemic. You know, you can't use that excuse anymore. And so now with the jab, you know, there's so much evidence coming out that these doctors now, they're going to be held to account for giving their patients the jab. You know, at the beginning, but, you know, they could say, well, we've been indoctrinated. I get that. But where did, how were they even tricked to being indoctrinated? They were really tricked to being indoctrinated because, and I was tricked to this too. We started homeschooling our two oldest when they were in fourth and second grade. And that's when we woke up to vaccines. So then Grace was never vaccinated. Okay, so what woke us up? What woke us up is if you believe in God, you're going to start realizing, okay, our bodies are fearfully and wonderfully made. We do not need allopathic medicine. So, you know, these doctors, a doctor who is a believer, I would say, is waking up to this and is going to run his or her practice in a different way than an unbelieving doctor.
That's correct. The doctors I've come across, like Dr. Peter McCullough, he's coming on the show. He's a friend of the program. He has really changed a lot of his thinking, especially about vaccines. You know, he was very pro-vaccines. He got every shot there was to get. And the more he studied the COVID shot, now he's changed his mind. I was very pro-vaccine because I was also, we were all indoctrinated as a population.
Correct.
That vaccines were the heroes and saved everybody. And I went in and started vaccinating my children. And on the outskirts, I started hearing about these moms who were saying that their kids were injured from vaccines. And so I go to my pediatrician because I don't know anything. And I said, doctor, are these moms correct? Are these shots really harming our kids? Oh, no, it's been debunked. Then I find this documentary, you know, with the Reawaken Tour by Dr. Andy Wakefield.
Yep.
About his discovery with the MMR shot and how it was causing autism and how the CDC covered it up, except he had a CDC whistleblower that felt so guilty about it that they did this documentary. And what, you know, Dr. Andy Wakefield found with his patients showed that there's a high correlation between the MMR and the childhood vaccines causing autism. And so I honestly thank God for COVID because it literally stopped me from vaccinating my kids because doctors wouldn't see us anymore. And then when I started seeing the effect that had on people negatively, I'm like, whoa, those moms may be right. Maybe vaccines do injure people after all. And I was just like, whoa. And then I started digging into childhood vaccines. And that's why I have a whole resource page dedicated to getting people information. Because you know what? Do you want anyone to be autistic because of a jab? No, if someone's born that way, that's fine.
Yeah.
But to do that to someone who was totally born just without any issues and then all of a sudden a shot gave them autism, that's cruel. That is cruel to do to someone.
Okay, so now we talked about incentives. So that to get you thinking, okay, this isn't right. You know, the hospital incentives for murder during the COVID era were extreme. You know, $39,000 to put somebody on a ventilator. The ventilator ends up being a $300,000 payment to the hospital. $13,000 for labeling COVID on the death certificate. You know, lie. So incentivized healthcare, that really is no good. But what about then protected healthcare? So we know about the Vaccine Safety Act. I can't think of the entire name.
1986.
So now Big Pharma gets a free pass on any vaccine injuries. Okay, well, think through that. I own a small business. If I screw up, I do not get a free pass. I have to make it right with the person I hurt. So why would they get a free pass? And what happens if we don't follow God's laws? God's laws are choice and consequence. So if you don't have a consequence for a choice, well, you and I actually started with this. If your daughter gets no consequence for missing her lunch, she's going to miss her lunch again, right?
Yep.
And this is so if Big Pharma doesn't get a consequence for murdering somebody or giving them autism, what's going to happen? Now, they have no incentive to make a good product.
And that's right.
And this now, that same concept, folks, is in hospitals. So we have the first lawsuit in the country, the first jury trial in the entire country for somebody murdered in the COVID era. So what have I found out? Well, I found out that the doctors have a wall around them in state statutory protection. You can't sue these guys. You know, we are doing it. We're doing it in a way because we don't care about the money, but they have put statutory limitations on the financial responsibility they have for a medical malpractice or death. And so then people, because of that, the attorneys won't take the cases on because there's not enough money to pay the attorney bill. So then people have to make a decision. Do I want to spend $300,000 of my own money to do this just on principle? Well, of course, that's what we've decided to do because the principle is to shed light on evil, and we're responsible to do that in God's economy. So that's why we're doing it. So you think about, okay, these none of this can get exposed. It can't be exposed because the state statutes limit the liability on the doctor on the excuse that, well, if we don't limit liability, these doctors won't practice in our state. Interesting. I figured somehow I'd weave this in. On the way up, I do my interviews at my office. On the way up, I was talking with Vera. Do you know who Vera Sherev is? She's a Holocaust survivor. Her and I've done.
Oh, I've seen her video. Yes.
We've done about 30 interviews together. Anyway, my wife asked me this morning, have you talked with Vera lately? And I it was about a month ago. So I called her and she said, Scott, your case is so big because you're going to show the world that once this is unraveled and they see it, you can't wrap it back up.
That's right.
And so, I mean, that's why I'm out sharing. So, okay, so now let's get to the point. So now hopefully by this point, you're convinced that, all right, I see what you're saying. So how do I prepare myself? Okay, so the first thing is don't go to the doctor or the hospital for every little sniffle. Realize your body's fearfully and wonderfully made. So then now let's assume though we're going to get to you've got to go to the hospital. All right. So then what do you do to prepare? And I'm going to show these links on Grace's website so people can go find them after the show. So I'm going to screen share these things right from the website.
Okay.
All right. So this is all at ouramazinggrace.net. So that's the website we're bringing up on the screen. All right. So then you'll see I have a hospital rescue tab right here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then that hospital rescue tab. So this is a toll-free number in case you're not prepared. All of a sudden you're in the hospital and you are being held hostage. How do you get out? So the lady at the end of this number is Laura Bartlett. She will help negotiate you in a desperate situation, but that's not what we ever want to get to. What we want to get to is that you have, actually, this is a video. I don't want to play that. That's a video of the hospital rescue. So I want to share, I think this actually, I've got to go to the resource tab. Sorry, Amber May first. Let's see. Okay, here we go. We have the right to advocate and informed consent. So let's do advocate first. So you've got to have an advocate with you, whether you hire somebody on the outside. So we have some resources where you can hire a professional advocate, or you have your power of attorney for healthcare, who is an advocate. This is from the Joint Commission, and it just is showing you have the right to an advocate. So you the hospital will provide an advocate for you, but you don't want their advocate. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work out. You need your own advocate with you. Why do you need an advocate with you? Because you want to make sure, you know, a hospital setting is a pressure situation. You want to have an objective, rational person with you that is going to follow your wishes. So this is just proving you've got a right to an advocate. That's what that tab is about. All right, so then the more important right is that you have the right to informed consent. So what is informed consent? So you can see this is the right from the Code of Ethics of the American Medical Association. This is what the doctors are supposed to follow. So it says informed consent to medical treatment is fundamental in both ethics and law. Patients have the right to receive information and ask questions about recommended treatments so that they can make well-considered decisions about care. Successful communication in the patient-physician relationship fosters trust and supports shared decision-making. All right, so there you have it. This is what they're supposed to follow. All right, so I'm going to drill that down here in a minute. But beforehand, I want to get back to the other piece of this. So forms you need.
Where can we find forms you need?
This is under the hospital rescue tab.
Okay, forms you need.
So forms you need.
And the website is ouramazinggrace.com?
.net.
.net, ouramazinggrace.net.
Okay, so we're gonna walk through getting to the hospital. So now you're going to the hospital, you get there, and the first thing they're gonna want you to do is sign off on a general consent form. Okay, so that's that little stupid screen with the fake pen. Do not do that. You're gonna sign off on a form, but ask for a printed version and take the time to read it. Set the stage to protect yourself. You're trying to protect yourself. This is going into enemy territory. And you've got to start with, don't trust. Start with an attitude of distrust. You are there to hire them for a service and assume that they are not doing something in your best interest. So get the printout of the form, cross off an initial, anything on the general consent form where you're turning over rights that you do not want to turn over for your care. All right, so that's the starting point. All right, so now you're there. All right, so the best thing you can do is get these documents on file with the hospital ahead of time. But let's assume that you didn't do that. At least you can have them with you. So I'm just opening up one of these documents. The ladies who put this together from Protocol Kills, they just did a fantastic job. And so you'll get a sense for what's going on here. So you're laying out, now you're presenting this document to the staff. All right. So you can see what it says. I do not consent to receiving any vaccine or booster. You're listing everything you do not consent to. You can list the things that you do consent to. So I request all life-saving measures. Okay, why is that necessary? Because they put an illegal DNR on Grace and they're doing this across the country. So you can see you're laying out these are your list of expectations. Okay. So this is called a medical directives document. And then you can list anything else that you want on there. You sign date. And this is what your power of attorney, your medical advocate is going to have with them at all times. Say, listen, we've already said this is what we're doing here. And you're violating that. And it's real critical that the advocate understand that, because there's never been a form that's ever been written that will save somebody's life. My wife and I rescued Robert Pazer, a disabled man from a hospital in Green Bay, Wisconsin, on November 5th of 2022. We used these documents, okay? 45 minutes after we gave these documents to the doctor, the nurse came in to give Robert the COVID flu jab. I said, listen, we just went through this. So we had to stop her from delivering the COVID flu jab, even though we had it listed on the paperwork, right? So it's critical people understand the paperwork is important, but the paperwork can't save your life. You and your advocate save your life. And now we'll get into informed consent, because this is the attitude that we've got to have. So picture you're driving to, you want to get you're going to a car dealership and you want to buy a car because yours just died. Okay. When you go in, you just don't get dropped off and have the salesperson hand you the keys to a car, right? You start asking questions. Mm-hmm. That's what being informed is, right? You get informed about your purchase before you make it. Mm-hmm. So you're holding the doctor to account here. I want to be informed about every single thing. So So what is his responsibility? He's supposed to go through the pros, the cons, alternatives. What are the possible repercussions? What if I don't do anything? And you make sure you are satisfied. He's always in a rush, right? He gives you this perception. I only have a couple minutes. You take as much time as you need to get informed. Then you take that information and you start researching it on your laptop. Hopefully you've developed a relationship with a trusted medical provider on the outside. You share with him or her, and then you schedule a time, or you set a time beforehand with the doctor, said, I'm going to review this and I will get back to you once you stop back in an hour and I'll have my decision. So you give your consent separately. So you're never under pressure. That's what they do. You know, and first of all, they don't ever do this. You know, sometimes they let you know what they did after the fact.
Want to make a point right here with your advocate. When you're that sick, where you're in the hospital, you can't really make informed consent.
That's right. That's why you need an advocate.
Especially if there's any kind of medication inside of you, pain meds, any kind of meds, because your mind is not fully functioning at that time. And so you really need that patient advocate to be there with you as you talk to your doctor to find out the pros and cons and do everything you just said. Because oftentimes we don't think about that, what in a bad state of mind we're in when we're that bad, that sick, that we need to be in the hospital.
That's spot on. So the attitude, so the most important thing, so once you change your belief, so you say, okay, I believe this guy, and I don't ask anybody to believe me. You can research the stuff yourself. But once your belief is changed, okay, well, now your attitude should follow that belief. So what does that look like? You are there to hire that team for a service. Mm-hmm. And that team can be fired based on if they're following your wishes or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No different than, so now you have a leaky toilet. And so you call a plumber, they come over, you know, if they don't finish the job because, you know, they had to whatever, I mean, or they did a poor job, you would fire that plumber and then you get a different plumber, right? You're not married to this doctor. You're not married to this hospital. So your attitude is, I am here for a service. And I'm not here to follow standards of care. I'm not here to do any of this. I'm here for a service. And I want to make sure I get the best service I can possibly have because I care about living. And I mean, if you go in with that, if I would have understood what I am sharing right now, I was with Grace. Okay, so I was an advocate, but my view of advocacy has changed. I thought I was there to, you know, really keep my best buddy comfortable and, you know, have somebody to talk with in a hospital stay. So I thought advocacy was really just to, you know, be there as a friend for your person in the hospital, right? It's mm-hmm. lonely in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what advocacy is anymore. The new paradigm is advocacy is there to protect the person from nefarious actions that doctors sometimes follow on purpose and sometimes are programmed to follow, that you are there to look at what are the alternatives and you have to protect yourself. And I can't explain this with enough fervor so that people really get this. It's going to save your life. This is a big, big deal.
It's a huge deal. Unfortunately, we have to come down to this, but this is where we are. So there's a couple doctors that I trust very much. I trust Dr. Meehan. You can find him at drmeehanmd.com. That's M as in Mary, E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, MD.com. Use promo code AMBER at their website, or Dr. Stella at drstellamd.com. And you promo code Amber May on her website to help save you money. These are two doctors I trust. So if you're getting a second opinion, if you need a second opinion, I recommend these two doctors. I use them personally. And they've seen what's going on in the medical world. They want to do better for their patients. So I trust them very much so. And I love the paperwork that you put together and the resource tab. So if you go to AmazingGrace.net, you're going to be able to find all this information that was presented today on the show.
Well, Well, thanks for, this was really good, Amber. Thanks for having me.
No, I appreciate you sharing all this information. Thank you so much. I thank you for taking something that was very painful in your life and turning it for good to help other people. I really do appreciate that heart of yours. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. You know, something else that just popped in my head I should share, because again, COVID exposed this. This was all in place beforehand. If you don't know this statistic, I'm going to share it. And I've changed my mind as to what the statistic means. So before COVID, heart disease was the number one killer in America, 700,000 deaths per year, followed by cancer, 600,000 deaths per year, followed by medical malpractice, 400,000 deaths per year. So medical malpractice was the third leading cause of death before COVID. So why it popped into my head is because you said it's come to this. Well, it actually was like this before, it just we weren't aware of it. Now we're aware of it. So medical malpractice, third leading cause of death. So remember, these would be only the ones reported. Okay. Hastening death is murder. So I'm going to call these not medical malpractice anymore. I'm going to call it medical murder. And the reason is they're using standards of care to shorten our lives on purpose. And they're getting paid to do it. This is before COVID. So it isn't medical malpractice. Medical malpractice has an incidence of negligence. So it's like, oh, that was an accident, right? I accidentally gave you, you know, I cut off your left leg instead of your right leg or whatever, right? It was just an accident. Okay. I mean, there are legitimate medical accidents, yes. You know, just like in my business, there's, you know, we make mistakes every day that we're human, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm talking about. These are only the reported deaths under medical malpractice. I would tell you bluntly, medical murder, so hastening death, is the number one killer in America. Number mm-hmm. one. Before COVID. COVID put it off the charts. So anyway, that's I know that's not a positive thing to close with. I get that. But, you know, the truth is not necessarily positive, but we need the truth in order to protect ourselves. So that's why I'm sharing it.
Well, thank you, Scott, so much for coming back on the program. I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you, too.
When you have your holiday, you could get the beloved cheesecakes. They're so delicious. I'm so excited. We have family over. We're going to enjoy this wonderful, delicious cheesecake. And if you use promo code AMBER, you could save some money at checkout.
It was so delicious. I was only going to have one piece. But I had her cut the piece just like the sliver. I got to have three pieces.
What did you think about the cheesecake?
I loved it. It was really rich, really yummy. I had the chocolate, and it was very, very good. And I really appreciate you that we got to eat some. Thank you.
Hey, so when it's the next celebration in your household, or you have company coming over, or you just have a craving for cheesecake, make sure you visit belovedcheesecake.com. Use promo code AMBERMAY at checkout to save some money. That's belovedcheesecakes.com. Remember, promo code AMBER at checkout. Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.